Good morning. It is time to get up with the biggest statement of the night. Could the Celtics be set for another playoff letdown? Plus, should the Cowboys draft Dak Prescott's replacement later this month? We have one person here who absolutely thinks they should. And could Tom Brady pull an MJ and make a comeback? You won't believe what he had to say about that. We got all that and much more as we get up with you right now. Welcome to Get Up. We are presented by ESPN Bet. I am Dan Graziano in for Greeny. I've got Monica McNutt and Alan Hahn here in studio today to talk some hoops. I've got Harry Douglas and Mike Tannenbaum here to talk some NFL. We got Dominique Foxworth getting up with us early and ready to go as well. But we begin, as I said, with a statement of the night. And that was Jalen Brunson and the Knicks visiting the Boston Celtics. And it was a Brunson kind of night. Second quarter, Knicks up one. Brunson in a groove early. Mid-range shot, Alan Hahn.
We call that a Brunson burner in New York.
Do we?
Yes, we do. And he hit six threes in this game, got into a good rhythm against a really good defensive team. They played all their guys in Boston, but did they play as hard as they normally would?
Brunson at 18 in the first half. Knicks led by 21. 10 minutes left now in the third. Knicks up by 20. Brunson still hot from deep, Monica.
1 point shy of scoring 40. That would have given him three consecutive 40-point performances.
Midway through the third, Knicks up 21. Dante DiVincenzo, the outlet pass to Brunson, who makes the three. Brunson was red hot all night. He finished with 39 points. Knicks went on to win 118 to 109. And with that win, the Knicks stay alive in the chase for the second seed in the Eastern Conference. ESPN Analytics says they actually have a 31% chance to get that two seed. But of course, that means they have a 69% chance to get the third. So that seems more likely at this point. But obviously, a big statement victory going up to Boston and knocking off the Celtics. No matter, and the Celtics played their guys, right? Like they were.
Sure did. Three quarters.
Yeah, Monica was there.
They did, but how hard did those starters play?
So I actually don't think that game was supposed to go that way. I thought the Celtics were legit playing through that first half. They just struggled to knock down shots. And then the third quarter, I'll give you, maybe they're taking their foot off the gas.
So coming out of that, Boston sitting there, what, 13 games in front of everybody in the Eastern Conference, obviously going to be the one seed. They've had that locked up. But, like, what kind of trust do we have in them at this point to actually do it?
Well, here the only team that can beat the Celtics in the East, in my opinion, are the Celtics.
Right.
Because they have been their own worst enemy last year. That really was the reason why they didn't get to the NBA Finals. Play with their food throughout the playoffs last year. The series with Atlanta should have never gone six. The series with the Sixers, an absolute abomination for both teams. And then that conference final, you think about how they went down 0-2 at home, went to Miami, and they got blown out in game three. How are you not ready for that game? They end up losing it in seven, so they don't get to the NBA Finals. And then this year when you watch them, they have been magnificent. They have been an unstoppable force. But there are times in games we've seen this season where they have blown big leads, mm-hmm. where they have not had good finishes. And then here's your other question. When you look at the coaching in the East, you ask yourself, when do they have the matchup where you say, I'll take Joe Mazzulla over the opponent's coach? And in the playoffs, that stuff matters, Mon.
Yeah, and that is a tough question to ask. I think this year is a little bit different. They're a year older. They're wiser. The addition of Kristaps Porzingis, to me, makes a huge difference in terms of the way that teams can guard them with the physicality. He obviously stretches those fours and fives with his ability to knock down the three and handle the ball. But I also think the emergence of Derek White, to me, is a little bit different than what we've seen in the past. In that run to the finals, you know, he was traded mid-season. I think he is solidified in who he is and in his role. And, of course, Drew Holiday gives them that championship pedigree. So I think that there's not a ton to take away from that game if you're the Boston Celtics. The feeling in the arena is that they've been playing basically meaningless basketball for a month. Yeah. And so they were due for one of these.
This game meant more to the Knicks than it did to the Celtics.
So I want to ask you about the Knicks. Like now you're talking about them as the two or three seed in the East. Like what is their ceiling? What can they accomplish? How deep on a playoff run can Jalen Brunson lead the Knicks?
Listen, man, you got to play the ball games. To me, this is a team that still has the ability to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. And yes, it looks different than what you thought it might. But Jalen Brunson has been tremendous. I mentioned over the highlight, he was on the brink of three consecutive 30-point games. I believe it's five, if not more, in the 30-point category. And 40-point was the first number, excuse me. He just continues to find a way. And this team has truly adopted that mindset sincerely. From head coach Tom Thibodeau on down, they're going to find a way. And the other night, we're talking to OG Anunoby after the game. He's very matter of fact in terms of how he can add value. They are simple things, but they have a profound impact.
The biggest concern for the Knicks is how much they rely on Brunson. Without Julius Randle, right, the secondary scorer. All the great teams that have championship aspirations, they all have another star to lean on, right? Mm-hmm. The Knicks don't have that. They have Jalen Brunson, and the numbers to tell you all you need to know. 35 points a game over the last 15 games. They've won 10 of them. But the plus-minus stuff is the thing that really throws you off, because it's plus 187 when he's on the court, minus 72 when he's not. They've got to figure out how to survive the minutes without Jalen Brunson in playoff games. Otherwise, they're going to have to play him 48 minutes, which you certainly can't do.
All right, we're a couple weeks away from finding out for real what's going to happen with all these teams in the East and the West. We got a lot more NBA to discuss as today's show moves along. Hall of Famer O.J. Simpson died of cancer at age 76 on Wednesday. Simpson was a Heisman winner, an NFL MVP, a popular TV pitchman and movie star, but he was also famously charged with murdering his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend, Ronald Coleman. Simpson was acquitted of those murders, but he was later found liable in a civil suit, and a decade later, he spent 9 years in prison after an armed confrontation with memorabilia dealers. There was a lot of reaction to Simpson's passing, and here's a sampling of it from yesterday.
One of the greatest athletes we've ever seen. A Heisman Trophy winner out of USC in 1968, an elite running back in the National Football League for many years. But all of that tainted forever and smeared by charges of being a double murderer.
O.J. Simpson, in a moment, had gone from being this hero, and he was a hero, to a murder suspect. It was unlike anything else, you know, that I've experienced in my lifetime, that America has witnessed really in the last half century.
Storylines change. Mm-hmm. You know, they go over the river and through the woods. And OJ's did, unlike anybody's. And so handling that legacy, I mean, you better have different feelings about different points of his life and careers, plural. And then you have somebody involved in the most notorious murder trial, I think, in the history of modern American culture, and all that has to be digested.
We all have long decided how we feel about it and him, and so there's just such a dichotomy. I mean, I'm still struggling, you know, to put it in the proper terms, because the football and the, you know, the 30 years after, shame is not the right word, but he's one of the very few. I mean, there's others. You didn't need a last name. Mm-hmm. OJ. I know who you're talking about. The Juice, yeah. Even. The Juice. You didn't even need to say OJ. You knew who it was.
First off, I have to apologize to the family of Ronald Goldman for reading his name incorrectly, and that's on me, and I apologize. But we do have a lot of thoughts on O.J. Simpson's death, and we heard some of those voices yesterday. Dominique, I know you have some thoughts this morning.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it kind of takes me back to that time in the 90s when we all kind of took sides, and it seemed like it was a bit of a, like, foreshadowing for things that we see in the future. It was kind of ironic that time. I was in middle school at a pretty much predominantly black middle school with all black kids and black teachers. And I remember breaking in to our class with TVs and us all celebrating OJ's acquittal, which was a weird feeling at that time. But it felt like, not that OJ wanted to be black. He obviously didn't. He like shunned the black community in general, but it still felt like kind of a thumb in the eye of a system that we felt like was a bit biased. And you can see that happening again in modern times with different groups of people, where people have shunned a specific group and that group feels a bit disenfranchised, rightly or wrongly, and then their response to it is to like cling on to a totem that represents something to them, that represents a thumb in the eye of a system that feels like they've been left behind. It's just ironic to have that happen over and over and over again, where we seem to position ourselves in a way that is divorced from the facts of a situation or the facts surround or the facts or the accusations surrounding a person who was accused of not just murder but domestic violence and several other things that we should not be encouraging, but still doesn't stop people from siding with a person because of what it may represent to them or what it may represent to the society at large.
Yeah, what Dom is talking about is real, right? Because during that trial, you had one side of the country over here, you had another side of the country over here when it came to OJ and the whole acquittal situation. But at the same time, and Mike T. Wheels talking about this earlier, it's hard to touch on OJ without telling the full story, right? And that's the story before 1994, when you have a guy who won the Heisman, who won an MVP, who was a media mogul, who was playing in movies as an actor, and a lot of people felt that was invincible at that time. And then the tale of two stories. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, you have the OJ that went on trial, even though he was acquitted criminally, he wasn't when it came to the civil side of things, and it just put a bad taste in a lot of people's mouth when it came to OJ from that point on. But you still have people that may have viewed OJ in a certain light who grew up with him as their hero. But then you have people right now that are walking the streets today who don't care anything about him. I just think when it comes to his passing, we also have to send our condolences to his family, especially his kids. That's who I worried about the most in this whole ordeal, because his kids had to grow up with that situation, that gruesome situation with their mother and also the talks around their father. So I send my thoughts and prayers out to the family of OJ, but also Ronald Goldman and also Nicole Brown Simpson.
Yeah, and similar guys, like, you know, in this situation, to me, like the highs, you have to acknowledge, like, he was an all-time great. You know, Dan, we're talking, he was an icon, like maybe similar to someone like you said, Michael Strahan, who was as famous for what he did as a pitchman, as a broadcaster, and he was an all-time great player. But on the lows, Harry, as you just mentioned, you know, we have to acknowledge and remember, you know, there were victims here.
Yes.
Nicole Brown Simpson, Ronald Goldman, you know, they were tragically murdered, and we have to remember them as well.
I think you can make a distinction, I think you actually have to, between sort of what he represented to people and who he was. We can't say he was a murderer because he was acquitted of those crimes. We can say he was a domestic abuser because we know that for a fact, and we've heard the 911 calls from Nicole Brown Simpson, the voice of a domestic abuse victim who was panicked that the system wasn't protecting her, and that's a problem that persists in society today. I don't think that she cared much about, at that point, what kind of football player he was. We can say that he was found liable in the civil case and ordered to pay damages that he still never paid, and I think the families that are trying to get that money probably don't care that he was a corporate pitchman, and then he spent 9 years in prison for armed robbery and kidnapping, and I think the people affected there probably don't care that you know, he was in the Naked Gun. So I do think that you can live the second part of your life in a manner that renders the first part kind of irrelevant, and I think this might be an example of such a person. As we said, died surrounded by his children and grandchildren after a battle with prostate cancer. Once again, O.J. Simpson dead at the age of 76.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Get Up is presented by ESPN Bet, the official sportsbook of ESPN. And in part by Vrbo, private vacation rentals. Relax, you booked a Vrbo. Meanwhile, on planet Earth, Travis Kelce officially graduated from the University of Cincinnati last night. And to celebrate, he proceeded to chug a beer on the podium. So,
doesn't everyone do that when they?
I think everyone wants to, but very few of us can get away with it. I think Travis Kelce is one of those that can.
I didn't chug a beer, but I had that little small bottle right there in my pocket, maybe.
A little bit. Yeah, snuck something in.
Where is his girlfriend in the audience?
I feel like we would know that if that were the case. But yeah, chugging beer might have been his major for all we know. So maybe that was a celebration for there. It's time now for Sound Off, where we react to things that people say. I guess that's pretty simple. An appearance on the Deep Cut podcast released yesterday, Tom Brady, remember him, was asked what he would do if a team called him in the event of an injury and asked him to play for them. Brady had a more interesting response than you might think. Take a listen.
If somebody goes down, would you pick up that phone?
I'm not opposed to it. If they would, I don't know if they're going to let me if I become an owner in the NFL team, but I don't know if... I'm always going to be in good shape. I'll always be able to throw the ball. So to come in for a little bit, like MJ coming back, I don't know if they let me, but I wouldn't be opposed to it.
Wow.
Wait, this is 100% different from everything he said for the past year, right?
Gross, that is stunning. I mean, there is going to be a team 2 weeks from today that we're going to be sitting here.
Oh, boy.
It could be the Raiders. It could be the Broncos that wanted to get a quarterback, and we know, you know, the vagaries of the NFL draft that are sitting there on Friday morning saying, well, Tom Brady said, hey, he considered playing. So under the rules, let's be clear, if you are an owner, you are ineligible to play for obviously a myriad of reasons. So if he really earnestly feels that way, he needs to stop the paperwork and say, hey, I'm an eligible free agent to play. That was a stunning statement that he made. I was shocked.
Tom, enjoy the retirement life, man. You gave 23 years to the game. Travel, enjoy your kids, go to the juke joint. Dom, you know what I mean? Have some fun, Tom. Hang it up.
Meek?
I don't agree. Clearly, Tom Brady has unfinished business in the NFL. His career is unfinished. Wow. He hasn't won enough championships. So I think that he needs to come back and win enough, because seven is too few for someone who considers himself the GOAT. Let's get more Tom Brady in the NFL. We haven't had enough of it, right?
That's a great point. He has a lot left to prove, I think, in the NFL. So he probably should consider Tom. I can't believe he said that. That's unbelievable to me. Like, again, everything we've heard for the past year is no. And now it's like, well, maybe. I don't know, man. I guess football's a hell of a drug. Anyway, we got another veteran quarterback with some interesting things to say yesterday. That would be Kirk Cousins, who's a new quarterback of the Atlanta Falcons. He believes the 49ers are still the team to beat this year. Here's what he had to say about that.
I couldn't be happier about where we landed and where we are and what we have to look forward to. But this everybody's kind of looking up at the Niners right now in the NFC. So if we're going to go anywhere, we got to get through this guy and his group.
So the Falcons, obviously a very interesting team due to the signing of Cousins and all the good players they already have. Yes, I know. That's your team. I get it. So are they the biggest threat to the Niners? You must think that they're the biggest threat to the Niners in the NFC.
No.
Oh, okay.
If you've seen the movie Friday, I'm going to go with the Detroit Lions. Just because I like what this football team showed us last year. Also, the culture that Brad Holmes and also Dan Campbell has been able to build in Detroit. When I look at this football team, they made a point to sure up the defense, right? They brought in DJ Reader, Marcus Davenport, also traded for Carlton Davis, which was a massive need in the secondary I can't wait to see what they're going to be able to do during the 2024 NFL draft because they really hit on 2023.
Mike, who's your biggest threat to the Niners in the NFC?
Guys, this is, it's the Green Bay Packers. They were unbelievable. Last nine games, 7-2. Jordan Love was playing as good as anybody in the league. They'll draft a left tackle. They added Josh Jacobs. They got three great young receivers, maybe more. I think Jaden Reed's going to be a star. They got two quality tight ends. They got a lot of young players on defense. If you just watch the games, they blew out Dallas and Dallas, and they stood toe-to-toe with the 49ers. So I love the trajectory of Jordan Love, who's maybe one of the five best young quarterbacks in the game today. And I'd be really surprised if they didn't draft a left tackle, which is really their only hole.
Neek, do you agree with either of these picks? Lions, Packers, biggest threats to the Niners in the NFC?
Yeah, those are great picks, but I'm going to go with the Philadelphia Eagles. I think what we saw from them last year was an issue with creativity on the offense, and I think bringing in Kellen Moore will help them address that. They certainly didn't have any offensive talent shortcomings, and on defense, they've started to address some of their issues with linebackers and safeties, and I think with three picks in the first two rounds coming up in this draft, they'll address the rest of those issues, and it's a team that's been there before with a quarterback that's proven that he's capable of doing it. If this offense starts to evolve a little bit, as I think it will under Kellen Moore, I think that this team will be back at the top of the heap in the NFC.
Well, we know somebody besides the Cowboys has to win the NFC East, so that's a good pick as any. I think the Lions are probably the best answer here, but I did want to make a point. I think that the Los Angeles Rams are a team that the Niners are going to have to contend with in their own division before they get to any of these other teams. Remember, the Rams just made the playoffs in their rebuilding year, the year where they took all the dead money on the cap and decided to try and rebuild. So now they have a first-round pick for the first time in 8 years that they'll probably make. And I think they're a team that's on the rise and probably going to be a factor quicker than people think.
What about Aaron Donald retired? Aren't you concerned about that?
Aaron Donald's a very good player. It'd be tough to replace. Yes, I would think that's going to be a problem. But it's not like they had nothing else on defense last year. Yeah. They got a lot of good young players on that
like
team.
Like Kobe Turner, also Byron Young. Those guys really stepped up. But being able to hit on Kyren Williams and also Puka Nacua, what it tells me is that Les Snead understands what he's doing. I was with him in Atlanta before he became a GM with the Rams, but Les Snead has really been hitting on his draft picks, and that's what you want to do. If you want to be able to contend, you got to hit on your draft picks, and they got to play an integral role on your team offensively and defensively.
Tre'Davious White. Tre'Davious White, pretty good signing for them, too. Veteran corner there who's done a lot in the league, so we'll see if he's healthy enough to help them. So NFC, very interesting. Speaking of the NFC, could the Cowboys really be considering drafting a replacement for Dak Prescott? One of the people here in studio with me thinks that they should. I bet you can guess who. Find out next.
Harry.
Get up.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season.
Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
You're watching Get Up, presented by ESPN Bet. Some looming NFL contract questions out there. That means it's time to play a game we call Pay or delay, where our analysts decide whether the guy should get paid or whether the team should wait. Pay or delay, it rhymes. Harry, let's start with you. Pay or delay on Justin Jefferson?
The Vikings better pay him. You talk about his first 3 years. No one did what he did in NFL history. Over 4,800 yards, 25 touchdowns. Last year, he only played 10 games, had over 1,000 yards and 5 touchdowns. You better pay that man.
Harry says pay the wide receiver. Neek, pay or delay CeeDee Lamb of the Dallas Cowboys?
Yeah, I feel like the players are going to fall on one side of this and management is going to fall on the other side of this. You can predict what I'm going to say. When you have a good player, pay him what he deserves. CeeDee Lamb has proven himself to be a number one receiver. Why are we not paying people what they deserve? Get that man his money as soon as you can. It'll be better for you. It'll be better for him. It'll be better for everyone in the long run.
CeeDee Lamb, one of several Cowboys entering the final year of his contract, if he doesn't get an extension. Another is quarterback Dak Prescott. Mike Tannenbaum, pay or delay?
Not to let down my friend Neek, we're going to delay.
Oh, boy.
He's got a $55 million cap number. I would have done something sooner. He's your franchise quarterback. But now that you're at this point, you might as well let it play out and see where you are next year, and maybe you have alternatives. But I'm really surprised it's gotten to this point. But since you're so close to the end, if you're Dallas, get through the season, and you'll have a really good idea of where the market is.
So far, delay has been the choice the Cowboys have made, and that has caused a lot of speculation. Our Adam Schefter actually addressed a possible situation the Cowboys should consider when it comes to the future of Dak Prescott, the quarterback position, and this year's draft. Here's what Adam had to say earlier this week.
What are they going to do at quarterback if they lose Dak? That's interesting, and that's why I think the Dallas Cowboys might just be a sleeper team in the quarterback market during the draft, because at some point in time, they might have to draft a quarterback higher than you'd think, because Dak is going into the last year of the contract, and it might be time to get somebody in there to start grooming him. Just like they found Dak Prescott in round 4, might be time to go find another quarterback in another round to begin to get him ready.
Crazy talk, right, Mike?
Not at all.
Oh.
Not at all.
Really?
Yeah. Look, Dak's going to graduate. He's going to have a robust market, justifiably so. If I am Dallas, I have to be prepared for him to go, and I have to look at the draft. And just for context, guys, they're picking 24, so we have a graphic on this. So roughly, it's about $3.3 million in terms of what the salary cap would be. And right now, that's Dak's cap number this year. But if you go to next year, and let's say his extension is somewhere between $55 to $60 million a year, what I would say to you guys, I'd rather have Dak Prescott over, let's say, Michael Penix. But is he $52 million a year better than Michael Penix, knowing that we have CeeDee Lamb, knowing that we have Micah Parsons, amongst others? And I think when teams trade back up into the first round at the bottom, like what we saw Baltimore do with Lamar Jackson a couple of years ago, they're looking at the salary cap ramifications. That's why I think someone like Michael Penix will go somewhere in the 20s. Not saying it's necessarily Dallas, but if I'm Dallas, I need an alternative because Dak could graduate next year.
Neek, my answer to Mike saying is he $52 million better than Michael Penix is maybe, right? Like, that's possible.
Yeah. Right. I mean, if he's the difference in you being a contender and not being a contender. You don't know exactly what you have in Michael Penix or any other quarterback that might be around at that point. You do know what you have in Dak Prescott. Maybe it's just me being risk averse, but I don't think this is a ridiculous idea. I mean, planning for any potential externality is a good thing. If they have a feeling, and I'm sure they have a relationship with Dak Prescott, they have a feeling that he wants out and he's not going to sign a contract and force himself to free agency, then by all means, start to prepare for the next phase. But if not, then I don't really see the point. If you want to keep him, then the point in drafting a quarterback is and hoping that something works out is fine, but it'll be a real uncomfortable situation for a third or fifth round quarterback to walk into where we're all thinking that this is the heir apparent to Dak Prescott. If they don't draft someone in the first round, which then is obvious. You draft a quarterback in the first round, then he will be your starter in the coming seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think they have more team needs than to focus on a quarterback in the first round right now. When I look at this team not having that running back that they want, they lost two offensive linemen. Tyron Smith went to the Jets. Tyler Biotis at the center position, he went to the Washington Commanders. So I feel like there are more needs. They can get more defensive pieces, more defensive line. Their first three round picks should be guys that are able to help their football team in 2024. They don't have a fourth-round draft pick, Mike, and the reason why they don't have that is because they used that pick to draft to go get Trey Lance from the San Francisco 49ers. So your developmental quarterback is already on your roster. I'm not picking a quarterback in the third round or the fifth round. I'm just not doing that if I'm Dallas.
But, Harry, if you're the GM of the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott knocks on your door next March and says, thanks for everything, I'm leaving, now all your eggs are in Trey Lance's basket, who's young, talented, but very unproven.
Yeah, look.
Well, so would be any rookie that you draft.
Right.
Any rookie that you draft would be unproven as well. Mike, it's not just Trey Lance. Any guy that you draft in the draft from the quarterback position as a rookie, it's not guaranteed they're going to make it. It's not.
Trey Lance, 23 years old and has $5.3 million in guaranteed salary coming this year. I think he's probably going to be on the roster. They'll give him another year to see what he's got. And the Cowboys, yeah, in the first round. We've been killing the Cowboys for not signing anybody in free agency. Now you want them to use a first-round pick on a quarterback.
It will be good, though, for us. It will be wonderful for us if the Cowboys took a quarterback in the first round.
Like an instant 30 for 30 on that. Much more on the NFL as we roll along. But let's pivot to the NBA and look at the standings in the Western Conference. Denver Nuggets, defending champs, in the driver's seat. Kings and the Lakers and the Warriors are all locked into the play-in. Suns trying desperately to come out of that number 7 spot. So a lot going on in the West, and we have our NBA crew back to play a game of fact or fiction. Western Conference theme, fact or fiction. Alan Hahn, the Suns need to win the West for this to be considered a successful season for them. Is that fact?
It's a fact.
Or fiction?
It's a fact now because they're a play-in team right now. Like, look at what they've done since the All-Star break, 14-11. They're a mediocre team. You've got 3 stars. This experiment right now doesn't look like it's working. And Frank Vogel could lose his job if they don't get out of the first round. So, successful season? Yeah, the only way to save it now is to make a run and get to the conference finals. Question is, can they?
Can they, Monica?
I am a KD fan and believer. This is heavily matchup dependent for me. I just think that their big three, they're a little late in terms of focusing on offensive prowess, right? Like, as we look at big threes, the third guy is that Swiss Army knife that can defend, that's really versatile. And I just don't know about their depth in addition to it being centered on those three pieces.
And how about also, I mean, I love Devin Booker, but you can't tell me you're chilling when people ask you the level of frustration right now. You can't be chilling. Like, you got it. It's a pedal to the metal time. Like, you can't.
You can tell them you're chilling.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I disagree.
No, you no. Well, it looks like it because you're down 35-2 in the start of a game against a Clipper team that's played nobody in that game. You got to start raising the level of expectations for yourselves on this team because next year, those three guys are going to cost $150 million. How do you keep that team together and it's not worth the while? So they've got a lot to prove right now. You can't be chilling. You need to go pedal to the metal and start really earning what a lot of people were giving you praise at the start of the season as one of the possible contenders in the West. Right now, pretender. Tonight's game against the Kings, that's your 7-8 play-in game. That's your 7-8 play-in game.
That's a big
for
game.
A team with 3 stars.
I want to go to Dallas now. I want to talk about the Mavericks because they have their foot on the pedal, right?
Yes.
Are they the biggest threat, Monica, to Denver in the Western Conference?
Faction. I think it's a fact.
Faction is not one of the choices.
A hint of fiction on it. Listen, Dallas
from the Book of Monica.
Dallas is playing excellent basketball. Daniel Gafford, PJ Washington, they have transformed the way this team is able to defend. Luka Doncic, Kyrie Irving, they need no introduction in terms of what they're capable of. Somewhere in my mind, I know it's a big if, the Clippers are still out there, and I think when they are healthy, they've been able to play with force on both sides of the ball that I don't think has been matches in the upper echelon of the league this year. But currently, right now, yes, they've got the size. You've got Luka Doncic versus Nikola Jokic. They both control the pace and the tempo of the game. They are elite distributors, and they both want to get a bucket when they need to get it done. That would be a lot of fun.
I'd love to see that as a conference final.
That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, because you also got closers, right?
Yep.
You got Kyrie's a closer.
Nobody's
Luka's a closer.
Moment, for sure.
That absolutely would be a fun series.
Yeah.
Interesting. Still, I can't get over faction.
It's mostly fact, but there's like a little clause where it might be fiction.
There's a dictionary, the American dictionary, then there's the Monica McNutt dictionary.
There's the get up morning different. Television, it's 3 hours updated. Of sleep dictionary.
Yep. Fact or fiction is not a segment that lends itself to gray area.
We
need an answer.
Hey, fact or fiction.
Usually
saying.
I'm the one with the gray area.
It's my world.
Monica, right?
Like, faction it's me. Is a thing.
The Golden State Warriors are the most dangerous team in the play-in. Fact or fiction?
Well, that's fiction. I don't need to make up a word. I'm just saying the most dangerous. Like, come on now. Like, look, this is not to be disrespectful to what has been a great dynasty. I've mentioned this before, though. Name me the last dynasty that has had three eras. You know, they have not. They won their championship a couple of years ago. They were able to get one more ring out of this group. But there's other teams that you have to look at in the play-in right now. The Suns maybe even being one of them if they wake up. The Philadelphia 76ers, to me, are that team that is the most dangerous team in the play-in because of that guy they just showed you there, Joel Embiid, the six straight wins that they have had. He and Tyrese Maxey have been fantastic, and you do not want a playoff series with Nick Nurse as the coach on the other side.
Yeah, and I continue to go to, like, slightly bigger picture, right? Joel Embiid's road to get to this moment, I would argue that there's a different level of scar tissue, there's a different level of resilience, having been close, having come up short, having to have navigate this injury, having already clocked his MVP, his personal life, he's growing as a husband, as a father, all those good things. Like, I just think there's probably a different level of focus for him as Philadelphia attempts to upset the apple cart. And for them, there's not reason for them to be worried about matching up with either the two, maybe the one, but the two or the one in the East, right? Like, if anybody's going to push Boston, you have to mention the Sixers in that conversation in addition to the
Knicks. I'm sorry, did they not almost be? They had them on the ropes last year, that same exact team. Yeah. So I actually think they shouldn't have any fear of the Celtics. And as the Sixers we use pedal to the metal again, the Sixers have been that right now. The Celtics have kind of geared down, right? Because they've already had everything clinched.
Yeah.
So can they ramp it back up? And you got a first-round series. Like, think about it for Boston. If it's Philly, Philly's ready for you. If it's Miami, you're coming out of that series battered and bruised. Right. So the Celtics really got to turn it back up and get themselves ready because that first round is not going to be a cakewalk.
Ironically, I kind of feel like, given last year's history, the Celtics would probably ramp up the quickest and the hardest to run it back versus the Heat.
Yeah, I understand.
Right?
Yep.
Just for a revenge factor?
Yeah, scar tissue is still there.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Scar tissue is still there.
So that sounds to me like it makes the 76ers even more kind of sneaky and dangerous for them than they'd be up for the Heat.
Make that argument for
them. Again, if you're Philly and you get that seventh seed and you're playing the Bucks, wounded animal in the Milwaukee Bucks, again, who should really be the favorite in that series if Giannis is not
available? If Giannis is not available, that game is completely changed.
Imagine a seventh seed as the favorite in that kind of a series.
Man, the Embiid return has obviously really made this fascinating, this early part of the NBA playoffs. We have much more to discuss as we roll along on Get Up. After trading Stephon Diggs, do the Bills need to trade up for a first-round receiver to help Josh Allen? The answer to this question may shock you, and we'll give it to you when we come back on Get Up. You are watching Get Up, presented by ESPN Bet. And it is time for some Overreaction Friday. It's Friday, right? It's Overreaction Friday. Dominique, if I said the Giants need to draft a quarterback in the first round, is that an overreaction?
Absolutely an overreaction. The Giants need a lot of things, and a quarterback, I think, is among those things. But if you want your quarterback to have success, I think we've seen over and over again, you need to bring him into a good situation. So I think the Giants, if there's a quarterback that falls to him in that situation, they're probably going to draft him. However, I don't think that'll be great for the Giants or the quarterback that ends up in a situation that doesn't have a great offensive line, does not have great receivers, and a defense that's in flux.
Mike T.?
Yeah, I disagree. I don't think they're going to get to where they want to go if Daniel Jones is their quarterback. I mean, when you look at what on that last segment when we talk about Green Bay, Detroit, San Francisco, all those teams can score points, and Daniel Jones has had just trouble staying healthy. So, look, they have a number of things. I agree with Nick from that standpoint. But can they consistently score with those other teams in the conference with Daniel Jones? I don't think so.
All right, Mike, if I said the Vikings are the best roster in the league for a rookie quarterback to go to right now, is that an overreaction?
Graz, it is not an overreaction. I was trying to poke holes in it, but when you look at starting with this guy right here, Justin Jefferson, and the left tackle, Christian Darrisaw, those are two great young players. And then you sprinkle in, hopefully, a healthy TJ Hockenson, Aaron Jones, Brian O'Neill at right tackle. It's hard to find a reason to think that a young rookie quarterback couldn't come in here and thrive.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal roster. When you talk about If not the best wide receiver in the game right now in Justin Jefferson, and you look at T.J. Hockenson, they just paid him. Jordan Addison having over 1,000 yards last year and really stepping up. In the absence of Justin Jefferson when he went down, that is a perfect situation. And then you have Aaron Jones in the backfield to be able to hand the football off to. So this is an excellent situation for any rookie quarterback to actually go into.
All right, I want to talk about a veteran's situation, and that's Josh Allen in Buffalo. Harry, if I said the Bills need to trade up for a wide receiver, is that an overreaction?
This is not an overreaction. They're picking at 28 right now. If you want a guy that you actually want, which could be Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU, you got to go up and get that guy. This is a massive need for this football team with the departure and the trade of Stephon Diggs and also Gabe Davis no longer signing with the Buffalo Bills and now in Jacksonville. So this is a massive need, and Josh Allen needs a weapon.
So I wanted to ask about the quarterbacks and wide receivers in these first-round situations. We are being told that this is a loaded wide receiver draft, right? So if you need a wide receiver in the first round, you are sitting pretty. So I want to know, when you look at this first round and all the teams, which would you say Josh Allen is the quarterback that most needs his team to draft a first-round receiver?
Hell yes.
And you just explained why.
Yeah, just explain why.
So, yeah, what would you say, Mike?
Daniel Jones, if we're going to go with Daniel Jones going back to the Giants, they need an explosive playmaker, somebody that can really be a difference maker. Maybe it's Jalin Hyatt last year, a rookie from University of Tennessee, but they need another player that can be a true difference maker on the outside. To me, if Daniel Jones is going to be successful, that's a big step in the right direction for them.
Dominique, who would be your quarterback that you feel most needs his team to draft a wide receiver in the first round?
Yeah, I'd go with Patrick Mahomes. I think what they accomplished the last couple seasons has been really impressive, especially last year. But it was a lot based on, while we do focus on Patrick Mahomes' late game heroics, it's a lot based on how great that defense is. And defense is not something that traditionally can dominate year to year like that. At some point, they're going to need Patrick Mahomes in that offense to return back to the way that we have come to appreciate or come to expect them to be. And I think they're going to need a receiver, especially with Rice and his legal issues. They're going to have to get someone in there that they can rely on. They tried a bunch of different ways, free agency. Maybe it'll be Hollywood Brown. But I think at some point they're going to have to draft someone to come in there and be their true number one as Travis Kelce ages.
Yeah, they've been patching it together at that position since trading Tyreek Hill. And Mahomes overcomes a lot, but I'm sure he would love to have a true number one to throw to. I went with Justin Herbert of the Chargers, who have lost Mike Williams in free agency and traded Keenan Allen to the Bears. It seems like they are in need of that position. They're picking fifth. They could have a really great one fall to them at that spot, or they could trade that pick to somebody who wants a quarterback and take a receiver a little bit later in the round. But lots of quarterbacks, obviously, that could use the help that a first-round wide receiver would provide. I want to get back, though, to Josh Allen, because that's kind of the most pressing news, right? They just traded Stephon Diggs. It's a roster in Buffalo that is in a transition phase. And I think a lot is going to be asked of Josh Allen, no matter who they draft, right?
Absolutely. But again, you look at what happened in Kansas City a couple of years ago. Tyreek Hill's traded to Miami. What do? They went back-to-back championships. That's the definition of greatness. And I got to think, Buffalo's a really good front office. When they made the Stephon Diggs trade, they're sitting there at 28. And Grouse, you just mentioned it. This draft is loaded with receivers, so they have to feel there's a receiver or two that will be there at 28 or within reason to go up. And then after June 1st, Tre'Davious White's cap charges come off their cap. Maybe they go after a guy like Brandon Ayuk or T. Higgins. So they do need a receiver or two, but it's really going to fall on number 17 here to step up his game even more, because that's just the reality. When you're paying a franchise quarterback and these other players graduate, you have to win with young complementary parts.
Neek, I feel like the arrival of Stephon Diggs in Buffalo sort of coincided with Josh Allen's rise to the top quarterbacks in the league. Does he need that guy? Do they need a number one receiver replacement for Diggs in order for him to continue to succeed?
It doesn't seem like he does. I mean, he continued to have success last season without throwing to Diggs very often late in the season. I think that Josh Allen's versatility is something that allows them to kind of cut corners sometimes on offense. It also creates some risk. But I think when you are in a rebuild mode like the Bills are now, I think we keep referencing the Chiefs because they did it the right way. And they did it by drafting a lot of players. And some of them hit and some of them didn't. So that's why I'd be opposed to them trading away any picks to move up for any player, unless Marvin Harrison slides to them or someone like that. But other than that,
I think you keep drafting and keep drafting on offense and defense, and maybe you become a team that focuses on 21 personnel and plays really good defense, a la the Kansas City Chiefs. Or maybe you become a team that throws the ball well. It depends on where those draft picks hit. You need to be flexible in your coaching staff, and you maintain that flexibility by having as many picks as possible.
Quick final word.
Now, I do believe they have to draft a wide receiver. Also, you can find a guy in the second, third, fourth round. When you look at Puka Nacua, you look at A.J. Brown, Tank Dell, second, third, fifth round receiver guys, you can find them all over the place too now.
I just can't help myself. Tom Brady announced that he's coming back. We're talking about receivers, Harry.
Yeah, I love receivers, man.
No, he wants you to come back.
Huh?
He wants you to come back.
Oh, no, I'm not pulling no tongue. I'd retire from the jug joint, but I love my family. I love being with my kids and my wife.
Harry's very happy here at ESPN. Coming up, could the Knicks' domination of the Celtics be a sign of a potential deep playoff run for New York? And is Boston set for another playoff failure? We're going to discuss all that when we come back on Get Up.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.